Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to History Dweebs. I am Tim, and I am joined, as always, by my good friend Charles. Chuck, are you there?
I'm here.
And Brandy. Are you there, Brandy?
Hello.
All right. Welcome to the podcast where we take a lighthearted look at the dark side of history. Today, we're going to talk about the San Ysidro Massacre, a very disturbing massacre that took place, shooting that took place back in 1984 at a McDonald's restaurant in San Ysidro, California. But before we get into that story, let me remind you all that we are a comedy podcast. We use a lot of adult language.
And see, adult now you keep saying, every show we say we, Timmy.
Mm-hmm.
But is it really we, Timmy?
Well,
is it really we?
What I really mean is Brandy uses a lot of adult language, and as such, we like to warn people, if that is not your thing, then...
Yeah, just get get your ass out of here.
Probably want to listen to a different podcast, because there are podcasts out there, Colonel, that don't have swearing, a lot of swearing, or, you know, women talking like they're a sailor.
There's classy women on podcasts, Timmy.
Yeah, well, classy women. Our good friend Nina, instead, is an example. She never curses.
Charlie
Erica
Warren.
Kelly. Charlie. She never curses. But Brandy, of course, cannot go 5 seconds without cursing. So.
Yeah. Well, now, Nina, she cusses like a sailor, Timmy.
Just not on a podcast.
But she has the decency to not push that on other people in a podcast, Timmy.
Yes, she's been to finishing school, whereas, of course, our co-host got kicked out of finishing school.
I guess our co-host been sent to rough sanding school, Timmy. As a matter of fact,
it's funny, Brandy. You got to admit it was funny.
It's so funny.
This morning, I was calling to, you know, make our three-way call, and I almost called the wrong Brandy, and I told Timmy, wouldn't it really be an upgrade, though?
Like a random Brandy that you would have?
Well, it was
a
Brandy that was in my contacts. I said, call Brandy, and I forgot to say, call Brandy with an I. You know, the hooker Brandy.
The former stripper.
Yeah.
Really?
And it sent me to another Brandy, and I was half tempted to say, hey, I'm going to shoot you the script over because... You know, I've read this script and it's excellent to me. And
thank you, Colonel.
It's an amazing story.
And I figured that
you're thinking if we just have like random Brandies on that it would be maybe we need to, you know, call out to random Brandies to join the podcast.
I mean, it couldn't hurt. Couldn't hurt. Except, you know, people would notice the tone, the change in tone. It would be like, oh, I listened to History Dweebs, and I came out feeling a little bit better about myself, Timmy. I came out feeling a little bit more cheerful.
A change of tone.
I came out feeling like I didn't feel like I had to take a shower afterwards, Timmy. That's what people would be saying.
I will mention that this. Yes,
this is particularly gruesome, but.
God,
sometimes, Devil, I'm just saying, your language, the words you use, they make people feel dirty. It's just
uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's not genteel.
What?
You have diarrhea of the mouth. We have been on here for almost 4.5 minutes and heard nothing but your cock holster going. Can we please
see? Here we go.
Begin our story.
Well, I would like to say this story is a little bit gruesome, as the Colonel was mentioning. So,
well, I think
anytime
you have a mass shooting, you have to give a trigger warning to me.
Yes, exactly. Let me introduce our Brady. Let me introduce. Yeah, I did. I did see what you did there. Let me introduce our panel. We're joined, as always, by the very lovely and talented, the lady who is known throughout the land as Brandy the Benevolent, Her Majesty Queen Brandy the First. How are you, Brandy, if at all?
Well, I've just wasted 4.5 minutes of my life listening to you two drone on about bullshit. But other than that,
well, as opposed to,
you know, I'm doing okay. Oh, okay. So
as opposed to the four and a half minutes, you could be sitting back drinking cough syrup and whatever it is else you do on a Sunday morning.
Yeah,
you didn't go to services today again. I take it.
I got up a little late for, actually, I didn't get up a little late for services, but no, I don't generally attend Sunday services.
Are you shocked there, Colonel? Does that shock you?
Well, no, it does not shock me.
I'm noticing neither one of you.
I attended online.
Has attended.
I was at the 8 o'clock.
Of course you do.
I was at the 8 o'clock service this morning.
We get up early to praise the
service.
The Lord.
At Perkins does not count.
The Waffle House service
doesn't count. Exactly, the Waffle House service. It doesn't count.
Well, thank you, Brandy. That was an interesting Brandy time. Let me introduce the Colonel, a man who is known as Brandy. He's been called the most dangerous man in podcasting. He's a light. He's a beacon. He's been called an oasis, Brandy, in the desert of despair. A man that we all can turn to in these times, these difficult times.
No.
He is considered a man who is he's above reproach, Brandy.
No.
The very honorable, the Reverend Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawk Walters III, affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. How are you today, Colonel?
I'm not good, Timmy.
You know what? Wait a minute.
Wait a minute. This is Chuck time. This is Colonel time. You've had Brandy time.
But Timmy, not to get political, but I feel like you are Chuck's Kellyanne Conway. That's what you are.
That's not true. Yeah. This man has a big following.
That's fake news, devil. Mm. Fake news.
That's alternate facts.
Alternate facts, yes.
Yeah.
So, Colonel,
that's who he is to you, Chuck. I hope you're happy.
Don't pay attention to her, Colonel. Tell us what's bothering you this morning.
What to me yesterday, I wake up to an empty house. And, me and Beauregard. It was me and Beauregard. And I think, you know, I got a good day ahead of me. Nobody around. I can, you know, do my Colonel stuff. And I find a little note on the counter. Okay. And it says, the groomers will be calling about 11. Can you pick up Rudy?
The beauty shop.
Yeah, Rudy was at the beauty shop. And I said, okay. And she said, and can you give Bo and Lily a bath? Lily is a cat, Timmy. Okay. Have you ever given a cat a bath?
I know. Aren't they self-cleaning?
Well, Lily,
like ovens?
Lily has really long white fur, and she likes to roll around in the basement. So occasionally I'll, you know, use these wipes to clean her off. But for some cat reason, somebody decided that it would be a good idea to give this cat a bath and for me to do it, Timmy. It was like going back to Nam, Timmy.
Was it traumatic?
It was quite traumatic. I got PTSD from giving a cat a bath. And I believe I needed stitches by the time I was done. And then I put Bo in there, in the tub. This son of a bitch thinks it's spa day. He's all stretched out. He's wanting me to massage his shoulders and his little thigh muscles and whatever it is, his hips.
And you did, didn't you?
I did.
You absolutely did. I did.
And then I went to pick up Rutabaga from the beauty shop, and they told me he's 7, and a beagle, his breed is Beagle German Shepherdness. It's, you have to worry about the hip joints, but they have special treats, Timmy, for dogs like him that you can buy, and you give them 2 treats a day, and the dogs like them. They got the glucosamine in there, Timmy. The stuff to lubricate your joints.
I see. That's the same stuff Timmy takes.
It's $72 for a bag of them.
See, that's why you need good health care, Brandy.
A dog health care. Well. And, Timmy, so I went and I picked up Rutabaga, and they handed me a piece of paper, and I said, what's this? And they said, it's a receipt. Just go pay at the register. It was $60 to give the dog a bath. Now, I had damn near lost my life giving a cat a bath for free. I should have taken the cat up there and paid the $70 to have him give the cat a bath.
Well, I'm sure it would have been cheaper for a cat.
Not for this cat, Timmy. This cat was... But she's nice and clean. She's curled up on my lap right now.
I thought cats kind of bathe themselves, don't they?
They generally do, but every once in a while you squirt them off real good just to get them... I don't know if I was
It sounds punk. Pretty bourgeoisie to me, Brandy.
I don't know if I was punk, Timmy. I think that's what happened. I think that somebody was like writing down, hey, and tell Dad to give the cat a bath and let's see what happens. I think that's what it was. I don't think
so
cat baths are
you
necessary.
You follow any directions that you're given, obviously.
Well, I'm a diligent man, Timmy. You know me. I do know you.
Yes, I do.
Fall through the cracks, Timmy.
All right. Let's talk about the San Ysidro Massacre, Brandy. Would you like to?
Not really, but we're going to, so okay.
This is summer of 1980. It is. In the summer of 1984, California was in the headlines, Brandy. In San Francisco, the Democratic National Convention was underway. It would soon... nominate Walter Mondale as its standard bearer. In Los Angeles, organizers were making last-minute preparations for the Summer Olympic Games. What were you doing in 1984, Brandy? Probably bad-mouthing your country and smoking dope.
Yeah. Protesting.
I was in the fourth grade. Yeah. I was in the fourth grade, so I wasn't quite there yet.
You were in the fourth Probably still grade in 1984?
Yeah.
I was in the fourth grade in 1984.
But she was 17 years old. Yeah,
Not quite.
That was
in July.
Not
that was in July of the summer of 1984. Summer is in July, Brandy. The small San Diego community of San Ysidro grabbed the spotlight for a very, very different reason, Brandy. San Ysidro, California, is a district in the city of San Diego, immediately north of the U.S.-Mexican border. It's a friendly community.
Spy Tijuana.
It is. That's another. Yeah, after the 1846 U.S. invasion of Mexico, the U.S. annexed what is now the southwest United States. And in 1848, San Ysidro found itself... on an international border, Brandy. Today, it's the fourth busiest border crossing town in the world. The 2010 census counted 28,000, just over 28,000 people in San Ysidro, of whom 93% were Hispanic, mostly of Mexican descent. On July 18, 1984, San Ysidro became the site of one of the deadliest killing sprees in United States history when James Oliver Huberty, a 41-year-old former welder from Canton, Ohio, opened fire inside a McDonald's restaurant with multiple firearms, killing 21 people and injuring an additional 19 others before he was fatally shot by a sniper from a SWAT team. The whole ordeal lasted 77 minutes. In fact, there was a There's a really cool documentary on this shooting called 77 Minutes that you can probably find on Netflix or on YouTube. The YouTube, Randy, I know you watch the YouTube a lot.
Mm, yeah. No.
She watches James, well, Pornhub, but...
Well, yeah, she does spend a lot of time on X-Hamster or whatever.
O-M-G.
James Oliver Huberty. I like the name Oliver, Brandy.
Okay.
Was born in Canton.
When you have children, you should do that.
Was born in Canton, Ohio. You ever been to Canton, Colonel?
I've been there, Timmy. I've been there. Football Hall of Fame, Timmy.
The National Football Hall of Fame is in Canton. He was born on October the 11th, 1942. And when James was 3 years old, he contracted polio, Brandy. Not the kind you play with horses, but the disease. And even though he made a progressive recovery, the disease caused him to suffer permanent difficulties when he walked, Brandy. Both of his parents were religious. His father was Amish, while his mother was an evangelical Christian, Brandy. That makes for an interesting mix. In the early 1950s, his father bought a farm in the Pennsylvania Amish country. James's mother refused to live in Amish country. You ever watch Amish porn, Colonel?
I watch Amish Gone Wild, Timmy.
They can't videotape it, so they have to do it live, Brandy.
Well, they have to do those little, you know how you do the little paper things, Timmy, where you get like 100 pieces of paper and you flip through them real fast and it looks like Amish porn right there.
Mm.
And if you look at it three or four times, then you can't really flip through it because the pages are all stuck together. And, you know, it's not practical, Timmy. It's not practical.
It is not practical when it comes to porn, Brandy.
No.
So mom refused because she was an evangelical Christian. She refused to live in Amish country, and she soon abandoned her family to do sidewalk preaching for a Southern Baptist organization. You ever do any sidewalk preaching, Colonel?
I do sidewalk preaching all the time, Timmy. All the time. Now, I'm not always preaching about, you know, our Lord and Savior. I'm preaching about, you know, the woman in front of me needing to speed her ass up or get out of my way or, you know, whatever.
I see.
Preaching about the frailties of other people and how they're inconveniencing the Colonel, Timmy. That's what I'm preaching about.
What are your thoughts on that, Brandy? If any.
Oh my God. He's not, but you know what? Just keep reading.
All right. So James's
mother. Are you
even
listening to this, devil? Are you engaged in this at all?
She doesn't seem to be engaged.
She doesn't seem to be. I mean, are you making pancakes or something? Did we interrupt your morning? I'm sorry if we did.
You know, it would be nice if you pay attention for our listeners, because our listeners work hard all week.
They do.
And the little bit of pleasure they get out of their dark, gray lives is listening to this podcast.
Really?
Listening to this podcast, Brandy. And at least that you can do, the very least that you can do, is pay attention.
Yeah, and it.
Well, that's
and
not
if the,
true.
It's the least you could do, that's what she's going to do. So at least just try to pay attention, devil. I mean,
I'm just listening to the two of
me
you.
Me and Timmy are here.
I mean, I'm just fascinated.
Me and Timmy are here giving our blood, sweat, and tears to entertain our fan base.
Let's face it, Colonel. Our listeners live a bleak life. They don't have the celebrity of you and I.
No, they've been
they
on.
They don't.
Yeah, we've been on the page. We know what they're like.
Exactly. And so their lives are pretty bleak.
Wait a minute. You know what I love? Chuck shows up on time once, and now all of a sudden he wants to be high and mighty about, oh, are you even paying attention? Are you even doing – just show up.
I wasn't going to bring that up, Brandy, but the Colonel and I were waiting for you today. You didn't see
– You weren't.
You were not engaged.
It wasn't 10 o'clock
yet. As he mentioned, you were not here on time. We were here ready to go.
I was.
Ready to give our all for our listeners, and you were not.
Did a quick run run through the script to make sure that we had all our facts straight.
You did none of those things.
But you weren't here. You were a diva. You could not be bothered
to show up on time.
I was what?
Diva-ing it. You're like the Kardashian of this show, is basically what you are. Well, you're famous for no apparent reason.
It's better than being Kellyanne Conway. So,
James's mother
being that person.
When James's mother abandoned the family, it had a profound effect on James, as he would become sullen and withdrawn, much like you are during this podcast, Brandy.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
I'm right here, right here.
In 1962, when Brandy was 12 years old, 20-year-old James Huberty enrolled at a Jesuit community college where he earned a degree in sociology. He would later receive a license for embalming at the Pittsburgh Institute of Mortuary Science in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Brandy, your thoughts on that, if any?
Well, the name kind of gives away where it's at, so that seems a little redundant, but good for him. That's a growing field.
Have you ever dated a someone with a mortuary science degree?
I have not, but I knew a guy that had a license to do embalming. Mm.
That's creepy. I think it's creepy, but I mean, I'm glad people do it, because if no one did it, then we'd all be screwed. But you know,
no, I don't understand why they embalm us, Timmy. I don't get that. I never understood that quite well, because why do you want to preserve a body?
Well, I think you want to preserve it so that people can, you can schedule a funeral and you have a, it's creepy to me. I just assume everything be closed coffin myself.
Well, it's like one day, Timmy,
we got you covered.
Yeah, we do have you covered, Timmy. We got plans for you.
We got you. We got plans.
I think it's cute that you think that you're going to outlive me. That's what I think is funny.
Yeah, Timmy's going to be doing this podcast.
I just bought a book of stamps. I'm just saying.
While at mortuary school.
I just bought a book of stamps.
Foolish.
And a 3-pack of mouthwash. So I'm planning on being around for quite a while.
Well, that just seems excessive. I mean, that just seems like you're consumer driven. You're just letting 3 packs of mouthwash?
You need a bar of soap, is what you need. wash your mouth out with soap, with your language that you use.
Yeah, that mouthwash ain't strong enough, girl. Because there's stuff coming out of that mouth that is not bacteria free.
Well, at mortuary school, he met his wife Edna. Oh, it's a love story.
Was she alive?
He thinks she was alive. Oh, she's a treat, man, this one. They got married in 1965, Brandy, and had two lovely girls, Zilia and Cassandra. The Huberty family, and by the way, James would claim that he was a Vietnam vet, but he never actually served in any armed forces.
Sweet. He's a good guy.
The Huberty family settled in Massillon, Ohio, where James worked as an undertaker at the Don Williams Funeral Home. I wonder, is that the guy that sings the songwriter Don Williams, you think, Colonel?
Probably, Timmy. He had a lot of business ventures back in the day.
In 1971, the Huberty family was forced to relocate to Canton after their house in Massillon was set ablaze. Brandy, your thoughts on that?
Well, who set the house on fire?
That's never been determined, apparently.
It's unclear.
It's unclear from my research who set their house on fire, but there.
Seems like shoddy research, but go ahead.
While in Canton, James found work.
The story is not about the fire, Devil. Now, try to stay on track here.
Yeah, try not to.
The story is about what this man does. It's not about some piddly fire in his house that burned his house down. That's a minor detail.
While living, I
kind of need to know.
While living in Canton, James found work as a welder for the Union Metal, Inc. James and his wife, Etna, had a history of violent behavior, Brandy. It wasn't all peaches and cream in their household, Brandy.
See, he was now. See how this comes in. He's like kind of cross training himself to be a really good funeral director, because sometimes you get those people that, you know, walk on the train tracks or whatever, and you got to bring them back in 48 pieces. He could just weld them back together. They could have an open casket for him, Tim.
That's a good point he's making there, Brandy. Yeah. Or if you got a zombie, a person who might be a zombie, he maybe weld the coffin shut.
Yeah. Yeah, a vampire? You think it might be a vampire? Weld that coffin, weld that zombie shut. Put a rose on the top. A rose is a flower. Dallas. You probably haven't got a rose before, but it's a really pretty fragrant flower, devil.
Well, at a birthday party for their neighbor's daughter, Etna, instructed her daughter to physically assault one of her classmates.
Did she deserve
it? Well, it was in an altercation with the child's mother. Etna threatened the woman with a 9mm pistol. Although she was arrested, the Canton police failed to confiscate the weapon. At one point, James shot his German Shepherd in the head when a neighbor complained about the dog damaging his car.
Now, see, that's some bullshit there. You just shoot a German Shepherd. And you know what? I'm going to tell you something, Timmy. We're going to tell this whole story about how this guy does some really dastardly shit. But you know what our listeners are going to remember?
That dog.
This some bitch shot a German Shepherd for no reason.
Yeah.
And that's
Apparently it was a lot of violence in the family. That's what I'm getting at here. Domestic violence was frequent in the household, with Etna once filing a report with the Canton Department of Children and Family Services that her husband was, quote, messed up. Her husband had messed up her jaw, Brandy. And to pacify James and his bouts of violence, we might want to try this with Brandy, Colonel.
Etna, I just got an idea.
Etna would produce tarot cards and pretend to read his future, thus producing a temporary calming effect on James.
She had
maybe
no
we could
idea,
do that with Brandy.
We need to keep some tarot cards in the office and some Xanax, Timmy. What I usually do is that's the key. Because me and the devil are still in a stress eating phase, is I usually go and crush up some Xanax and put it on a lunch, and she doesn't really know it, Timmy. It makes them more pleasant in the afternoon.
Here's the thing, though. Maybe I notice.
Yeah, well, that's true.
As a result of a motorcycle accident, James had an uncontrollable twitch in his right arm, Brandy, a condition that made it impossible for him to continue as a welder. Well, I guess that would.
That would be a problem.
And an embalmer, too.
His co-worker, well, yeah, but if you screw up there, I mean, really, how much harm can you do?
Well,
his co-workers described him as hard to get along with, Brandy.
I can't imagine.
In January 1984, so this is like a few months before the, 6 months before the shooting, the Huberty family left Canton and briefly stayed in Tijuana, Mexico.
That's where all the families are moving.
Well,
to.
James,
they got good schools there, Timmy.
I thought maybe he was just moving there, Brandy, for the donkey shows. James,
I wonder how bad that twitch was, because it's hard to get a job when it looks like you're jerking off all the time, Timmy. Sitting at a desk with your arm twitching like
that. You got a job with the kids.
Well, that's true.
I mean, anything.
You know, they paint donkeys with stripes on them in Tijuana, Mexico, to make them look like zebras to take pictures.
I did not know that.
Do you know why?
A lot goes on in Tijuana, Mexico.
Do you know why, Timmy? This is one of those more you know things.
Uh-huh.
Do you know why we have never domesticated zebras?
Why is that, Colonel?
Because they bite.
Well, it's not just that they bite. When they bite, they don't let go. They don't let go. Now, a horse will bite you and kick you, but a zebra, when he bites, he don't let go. He just chomps his teeth down onto your arm.
Well, that's fascinating, Colonel. That's why you people know, turn into this
and
podcast.
Speaking of this, I don't want to get off track on this story, but I got to tell you just a brief story, Timmy, that reminds me of something chomping down on your arm. So I was when I was a younger man, I worked for a local pizzeria, and I was older and I was the closest one to the restaurant. And when the alarm would go off at night, I would go up and check on it, and it was usually just a malfunction, you know. And the police would show up, and this is going back to some years, This particular time, the police told me just unlock the door and get back on the sidewalk because it was a wooden building, Timmy, and some really industrious burglar had broken a hole in the side of the building and crawled through. So I get there, and I'm in the presence of some fine police officers with a 93-pound German Shepherd dog, Timmy.
What are the odds that I just heard this story? I mean, literally,
I know,
just
and
heard this story
and other
story.
People would like to hear it.
I'm going to make coffee.
So, the policeman yells, Timmy. He says, "I have a 93-pound German Shepherd dog here. I'm going to count to three, and I'm going to release the dog." Now, strangely, my friend, who I will not name on here, was the one who broke the hole in the wall. I just knew him, you know, from about the neighborhood. And
so he was the guy breaking into the restaurant.
He was. Okay. And he was the burglar. And he decided that he could hide under a booth, Timmy. And the dog found him. Under the booth. And there are very few things in this world, places that you want to be, like under a booth with a 93-pound German Shepherd.
Yeah.
So the dog chewed him up so bad that they had to call an ambulance for him, Timmy. So he spent about a year in jail.
That's why you
got to
stay on a straight and narrow, Colonel.
You do. And this is a warning to our listeners. So he stayed in jail. But here's the funny part. I seen him about a year after he went to jail. He had a big scar on his face and everything. And I was like, "Joe, when they called you, why didn't you just come out?" And he's like, "I didn't think the dog could find me. I don't know." He said, "But I'm going to tell you something, Chuck, and you're not going to believe me, but it's the truth." He said, "When that dog got under the table with me, its eyes turned red, Timmy." He said, "Its eyes turned red. All I saw, it looked like the devil was coming underneath the table with me."
See, that's why you need to always be on a straight and narrow.
But here's the moral of that story, Timmy. Police dogs are trained to get a hold of your arm and clamp down until
like
you're still. So if you ever get attacked by a police dog or any other dog, throw out your forearm, let him grab it, be still, and you won't get chewed up and shredded up into 1,000 pieces, Timmy.
That is information, Brandy, that our listeners desperately need.
Good to know.
Yes, that's information that a lot of our listeners can use. See, you don't just get a story, but you get life hacks on this show.
Life lessons, yes, life lessons.
Yeah.
All right, so James and his family moves to Tijuana, but he soon regrets it because he can't speak Spanish, Brandy. And he becomes sullen and taciturn, Brandy. Your thoughts on that? Apparently she has no thoughts. She's
what a dumbass.
Anyway, so then they move across the border back to the United States and settle in San Ysidro, California, which is right across the border from Tijuana. It was here that James was able to find work as a security guard in San Ysidro. However, he was dismissed from his position, which would have been in late June. And the family apartment the family lived three blocks away from this McDonald's where James would end up doing his dastardly deeds. On the day before the massacre, James had called a mental health center and had been said he had been experiencing severe headaches, and his wife described him as somewhat agitated. When James called the mental health center, the receptionist misspelled his name on the intake form as Schuberty. His polite demeanor conveyed no sense of urgency to the operator, and he had he elaborated on the in the phone call that he had never been hospitalized for mental health issues. Therefore, the call had been logged as non-crisis, and he was told that someone would be in contact with him within the next 48 hours. So he didn't raise any red flags, apparently, Brandy, when he called the crisis center, although you would think calling a crisis center itself would be a red flag.
Is the red flag. Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that the red flag when you call?
I would think so. James Huberty and his family went to the San Diego Zoo on the morning of July 18, 1984, the day of the shooting, and the family had eaten at a McDonald's in the Claremont neighborhood in northern San Diego a few hours prior to the massacre. Now, his wife would later claim that his behavior was a result of him eating at McDonald's. The family ate at McDonald's a lot, and she would claim that that contributed to his mental health issues, and she would later try to sue McDonald's for
eating McDonald's.
Yeah,
McDonald's contributed.
She said it was his diet that was contributing.
Well, remember the guy who tried to get off on because of the Twinkies?
That's Twinkie diet, Brandy.
The Twinkie defense.
When the family got home from the zoo, James seemed to withdraw from Aetna and the kids. The children were watching cartoons on TV, probably He-Man back in 1984. Wouldn't you think so, Brandy?
Oh. Yes.
He-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
Could be Scooby-Doo, though.
James walked into his bedroom wearing a maroon T-shirt and green camouflage slacks. As his wife lay relaxing upon their bed, he leaned toward her and he said, "I want to kiss you goodbye." Aetna kissed her husband and then asked where he was going, stating her intention to soon prepare the family dinner. Well, they eat a lot, Brandy. Your thoughts on that?
Well, that could have been part of the problem.
James Conling replied that he was going hunting for humans. Quote, unquote. Damn. That should have been a red flag, Brandy.
There's another red flag.
That is
now,
a
see,
red
the
flag.
Call in there, I will say the first call saying, you know, well, I got some headaches, you know, I'm not doing great, but your demeanor is polite. That's kind of a mob flag to me. Just a mob flag. Not the red flag. Serious red flag.
It's a red flag.
It's just
my favorite gif out there is this thing. It's this big old red flag, and he's like, it's like a parade of like people banging drums and blowing horns and stuff, you know, like on Facebook or whatever. I don't know why I shared that with you, but it's my favorite gif.
I don't gif.
Oh. It's a gif, Brandy.
Well, I mean, this guy's throwing up more red flags than a fucking World Cup ref, so I don't understand why nobody is doing something.
Holding a gun across his shoulder and carrying a box of ammunition.
Okay, there's another one. There's another one.
Yeah, and there we
with
go.
With a bundle wrapped in a checkered blanket, James glanced toward his eldest daughter, Zella, as he walked toward the front door of the family home and said, "Goodbye, I won't be back." As James closed the door.
There's another one. I mean, I don't know what you...
Right.
Huh. Did nobody ever say, "Daddy, Daddy"? I mean, what kind of sumbitch did... You know, I mean, and sometimes, you know, this might be hard to imagine, but I can have disputes with my family, Timmy. Sometimes there's tension in the house. But if I were to walk out and say, "Well, I'm going hunting for humans," and goodbye.
Well, James was a survivalist, and he had like these weird conspiracy theories that
he was a doomsday
Jimmy Carter was out to get him, and then he said Ronald Reagan was out to get him, Yeah, he's a doomsday prepper, and he was in, you know, he was fascinated with firearms and such. Anyway, when he walks out the door, he glances back to his wife, Etna, and says, quote, unquote, "Society has had its chance." Another red flag.
There's another one.
When questioned later by police, Etna gave no explanation as to why she failed to report this bizarre behavior.
She was probably hoping he would die while he was out.
Or this might be something that some bitch did every day. You don't know. You know,
but it doesn't sound like Etna was all there either. I mean, well, you know, she's threatening people at her, you know, kid's birthday party with a 9mm pistol.
What, was this on a Sunday, Timmy?
You got to.
No, it was a Wednesday. It was a Wednesday when this massacre took place.
Yeah, so she was, you know, she was probably watching a soap opera. She probably didn't even wasn't really paying attention.
Oh, it's probably none of the kids were watching cartoons, but you're right. She probably was waiting for Days of Our Lives to come on.
Yeah, eating her bonbons and doing whatever, cleaning out.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
A 9mm just in case she had another altercation at the PTA. So.
Okay.
What happens next, Brandy?
Tell us, Brandy.
All right. So James then drove his black Mercury Marquis.
Sweet ride.
Down San Ysidro Boulevard. According to eyewitnesses, he drove first towards a Big Bear supermarket in a strip mall, and then towards the U.S. Postal Office branch, before entering the parking lot of a McDonald's restaurant only approximately 200 yards from his family's apartment.
Damn, why did he need the car? He didn't have a Fitbit.
Well, clearly. A witness who spotted James as he left his apartment and proceeded down San Ysidro Boulevard with two firearms phoned police. Well, finally, somebody fucking did. But dispatchers gave the reporting officers the wrong address. For fuck's sake. At 3:56 p.m., James pulled into the parking lot of the McDonald's restaurant on San Ysidro. In his possession were a 9mm Browning HP semi-automatic pistol, a 9mm Uzi carbine, a Winchester 1200 12-gauge pump-action shotgun, a box, and a cloth bag filled with hundreds of rounds of ammunition for each weapon. The McDonald's restaurant is one of the busiest in Southern California. A total of 45 customers were present inside the restaurant when James arrived. After entering the restaurant, James first aimed his shotgun at a 16-year-old employee named John Arnold. As he did so, the assistant manager, Gilbert Flores, shouted, "Hey, John, that guy's going to shoot you." Well,
she was stating the obvious, I think.
Yeah,
the painfully obvious. According to Arnold, when James pulled the trigger, nothing happened.
Oh, he had a dead round.
Huberty,
oh, no.
That's embarrassing,
as
Colonel.
James Huberty inspected his gun, the manager of the restaurant, 22-year-old Neva Kane, walked toward the service counter of the restaurant in the direction of Arnold. As Arnold, believing the incident to be a distasteful joke, began to walk away from the gunman.
That, see, before she walked toward him, walking away from the gunman is a good idea. Walking toward them and then kind
of,
yeah.
Well, I mean, I think people are like super aware of these, you know, mass shootings and things today.
This was like the first big one in the 24-hour news cycle, Timmy.
Yeah. I mean, this is 1984. I mean, they certainly happened. Like they had the, you know, the Texas shooting, the University of Texas in the 60s, but it wasn't as prevalent as it was today. So I don't think the guy would have thought it was a, you know, poor joke. If it happened today, I think it would have been probably a different response. But
well, I just think him walking down the street with all those weapons today would have got him.
Sure.
Now this guy's a complete, just horrible. All right. So just then, James fired his shotgun toward the ceiling before aiming the Uzi at Kane, shooting her once beneath her left eye. She would die minutes later. Immediately after shooting the young manager, James fired his shotgun at John Arnold, wounding the teenager in the chest and arm before shouting a comment to the effect of, "Everybody on the ground." James then referred to all present in the restaurant as dirty swine Vietnam assholes, before claiming that he had killed 1,000 and that he intended to kill 1,000 more. Pandemonium then broke out in the restaurant. Upon hearing James' profane rant and seeing Kane and Arnold shot, one customer, 25-year-old Victor Rivera, tried to persuade James not to shoot anybody else. In response, James shot Rivera 14 times, repeatedly shouting, "Shut up," as Rivera screamed in pain.
14. Now, do you know what a Uzi is, Devil? You remember the Uzis from back in the 80s?
Yeah, they were Israeli weapon, right?
Right, they were automatic weapons. They were banned, and Uzi did not come out because they were not particularly accurate weapons. They just sprayed a lot of bullets. So, just so our listeners know, there's a difference. The Uzi, they banned that one, and it's never come back. Mm. But during the drug, during these years, the drug years, they were very, very popular guns. The drug runners,
because
you could put out so
like,
many rounds.
Like Tony Montana.
Yeah, Tony Montana had a Uzi. So, yeah, they are Israeli guns, but they were.
Yeah. So this cowardice piece of shit, as staff and customers tried to hide beneath tables and service booths, James turned his attention towards six women and children huddled together. Piece of shit. He killed 19-year-old Maria Silva with a single gunshot to the chest, then fatally shot 9-year-old Claudia Perez in the stomach, cheek, thigh, hip, leg, chest, back, armpit, and head with his Uzi.
See, and I've
because that nine-year-old was posing such a threat.
And I think this is a difference in today and back then, is these people all huddled in these booths. Now today, people will be running toward the doors. They'd be trying to get, you know what I mean? They would not sit around. People have learned, don't just stay in one place.
Well, and the training now is not even not just to run away, but you got to try to take the guy out.
Run
where
toward
before
him,
they would say, don't try anything that would upset him or draw attention to you. Now they're saying basically, you got to take that guy out.
Yeah, you got to take him out and hit him with a salt shaker, do something, throw stuff at him, and then try to get the hell out of there. But, you know, that's back before people knew, you know, that staying in one place was just going to get you killed.
Exactly.
So after he shot up the 9-year-old, he then wounded her older sister, Imelda. He shot her once in the hand. He then fired upon 11-year-old Aurora Pena with his shotgun. Pena, initially wounded in the leg, had been shielded by her pregnant aunt, 18-year-old Jackie Reyes.
And here's what this next part is the point I was making.
What? Oh. James shot Aurora Reyes 48 times with the Uzi.
Yeah, I mean, with the Uzi, you could just put out so many rounds so fast.
She was 11.
Jesus Christ.
Beside her mother's body, 8-month-old Carlos Reyes sat up and wailed. Whereas James shouted at the child, then killed the baby with a single pistol shot to the center of the back. I don't like these stories, Pimmy. James then shot and killed a 62-year-old trucker named Lawrence Versalles before targeting a family seated near the play area of the restaurant who had tried to shield their son and his friends beneath the tables with their bodies. 31-year-old Blythe Reagan Herrera had shielded her 11-year-old son, Mateo, beneath one booth as her husband, Ronald, protected Mateo's friend, 12-year-old Keith Thomas, beneath a booth directly across from them. Ronald Herrera urged Thomas not to move, shielding the boy with his body. Thomas was shot in the shoulder, arm, wrist, and left elbow, but was not seriously wounded. Ronald Herrera was shot 6 times in the stomach, chest, hip, arm, shoulder, and head, but survived. His wife Blythe and son Mateo were both killed by numerous gunshots to the head. Nearby, 3 women had also attempted to hide beneath a booth. 24-year-old Guadalupe Del Rio lay against a wall. She was shielded by her friends, 25-year-old Gloria Ramirez and 31-year-old Arisdelcy Vargas. Del Rio was hit several times but not seriously wounded. Ramirez was unhurt, whereas Vargas received a single gunshot wound to the back of the head. She died of her wound the next day and the only person fatally wounded who lived long enough to reach a hospital. In another booth, James killed 45-year-old banker Hugo Vasquez with a single shot to the chest. At approximately 4:05, a Mexican couple, Astolfo and Maricela Felix, drove toward one of the service areas at the restaurant, noting the shattered, laminated glass. Astolfo initially assumed renovation work was in progress and that James Huberty, striding toward the car, was a repairman. James fired his shotgun and Uzi at the couple and their 4-month-old daughter, Carlita, striking Marcela in the face, arms, and chest, blinding her in one eye and permanently rendering one hand unusable. Her baby was critically wounded in the neck, chest, and abdomen. Astolfo was wounded in the chest and head. As Astolfo and Maricela staggered away from James Huberty's line of fire, Maricela gave their baby to her husband. Astolfo handed the shrieking child to a young woman named Lucia Velasco as his wife collapsed against a car. Velasco rushed the baby to a nearby hospital as her husband assisted Astolfo and Marciela in a nearby building. All 3 members of the Felix family survived. The first of many calls to emergency services was made shortly after 4 p.m., notifying the police of the shooting of a child who had been taken to the post office on San Rashido Boulevard. Jesus Christ, the dispatcher mistakenly directed responding officers to another McDonald's 2 miles from the McDonald's that he needed to be at. What is wrong with the 911 system there?
Well,
why can't they get an address?
But then again, you're going back to 1984. So
I know, but still, you have one job.
Well, there's a McDonald's on every corner. Delayed. So
right, there's so many McDonald's. This error, and you know, it's kind of the fog of war. I mean, people are just, you know, they're trying to get the information right. And if you get a little information wrong, you know, it creates a delay.
This error delayed the imposition of a lockdown by several minutes. And the only warnings to civilians walking, riding, or driving toward the restaurant were given by passersby.
And this is where this delay, you know, really was costly, because you have 3 11-year-old boys that rode their bikes into the west parking lot to buy some sundaes. Now, you know, without this delay, the police are already going to be there. Now, they heard a member of the public yelling something, but they couldn't figure out what it was, and all three hesitated. But then Huberty shot the three boys with a shotgun and an Uzi. And again, that Uzi, it can just keep firing around. So if you're in the parking lot, it can spray the whole damn parking lot. Joshua Coleman was one of the kids. He fell to the ground critically wounded in the back, arm, and leg. Now, he later recalled looking towards his two friends, Omar Alonso Hernandez and David Flores Delgado. And he noted that Hernandez was on the ground with multiple gunshot wounds to the back and had started vomiting. Delgado had received several wounds in the head. Joshua Coleman survived. Hernandez and Delgado both died at the scene.
Yeah, and in this documentary, 77 minutes, they interview Joshua Coleman. He talks about how they rode up there on the bike and, you know, just kids out on their bikes getting ready, you know, stop by for some ice cream. And, you know, there two of them are shot dead.
Right. Well, he next noticed an elderly couple, 74-year-old Miguel Aloya and his 69-year-old Aida Victoria walking toward the entrance. So, again, all this is going on and customers are still going in. And as Miguel reached the open door for his wife, James fired his shotgun, killing Aida with a gunshot to the face and wounding Miguel. Now, an uninjured survivor. This guy's uninjured, Oscar Mondragon, later reported observing Miguel cradling his wife in his arms, wiping blood from her face, and shouting curses at James, who then approached the doorway, saw Miguel, and then killed him with a shot to the head. Now, 10 minutes after the first call had been placed to emergency services, police arrived at the correct McDonald's. The first officer on the scene, Miguel Rosario, rapidly determined the location and cause of the actual disturbance, relays this information onto the San Diego Police Department as James fired at the patrol car with his rifle. Officers deployed immediately and they imposed a lockdown on an area spanning six blocks. The police established a command post two blocks from the restaurant. And this, again, this is something different because, you know, they learned from the, we've had so goddamn many of these things. They learned from the Columbine thing. Don't wait around an established command post.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just rush in there because the longer you wait, the more people are going to die.
Die, exactly.
But, you know, this was the common tactical practice at the time. Was police established a command post two blocks away and deployed 175 officers in strategic locations. And they were joined within the hour by several SWAT team members who took positions around the restaurant. And again, you know, things have changed so much that we had so many of these damn things that police have changed their whole approach to these. They have response teams now for...
Yeah, especially trained for these scenarios.
For these scenarios, yeah. And, you know, these policemen showing up were not something they'd never seen before.
Sure.
Now, a deadly standoff then took place for the next hour with James and law enforcement officers exchanging periodic fire. At 5:17, Huberty walked from the service counter toward the doorway close to the drive-through window of the restaurant. Now, there was a 27-year-old police sniper named Charles Foster. He was deployed at a strategic position on a roof of a post office directly opposite the restaurant. He had an unobstructed view of the body from where he was at when he got to that drive-through window from the neck down through his telescopic sight. Foster fired one round from about 35 yards, and he's got a sniper rifle, so they do a lot of damage. And it hit Huberty in the chest. And, of course, it severed his aorta, and it exited through his spine, leaving an exit wound 1 inch square. And it sent him sprawling backwards onto the floor directly into the service counter, killing him almost instantly. Now, this entire incident, as you said in the thing to me, lasted 77 minutes. Jeez. During which time, Huberty fired 257 rounds of ammunition.
Minimum.
Yeah, a minimum. He killed 20 people, wounding as many others, one who was pronounced brain dead upon arrival at the hospital and died the following day. 17 of the victims were killed inside the restaurant. 4 were in the immediate vicinity of the restaurant. There were only 10 individuals in the restaurant who were uninjured, and 6 of those had hidden inside the basement utility room. Now, they didn't do any further, not that I know of, any further examination on him. But, you know, I find it interesting that this guy was starting to suffer from headaches before this.
Yeah, and I mean, at least he was somewhat, I mean, he was aware that he had mental health problems. I mean, he reached out, late, but he did reach out to the crisis center. And his wife, though, I mean, they set up a fund. McDonald's Corporation set up $1 million fund for the survivors, and they took donations from individuals as well. Joan Kroc, who was the wife of McDonald's founder Ray Kroc, donated $100,000 herself, but because one guy had donated money, and he stipulated that that would include the money that he donated had to go also to the family of the shooter.
Mm-hmm.
The first person to get to apply and receive money from this fund was Etna Huberty.
Of course.
She later sued McDonald's, as I said earlier, claiming that her husband's poor diet, he ate at McDonald's almost every day, led to the tragedy. That case was dismissed in 1987. Etna Huberty died of breast cancer in 2003. And, you know, I didn't include this in the script, but a lot of the officers and first responders had post-traumatic stress syndrome from this. It was a lot of divorces among them, and even, you know, several suicides from people who responded to the shooting. And of course, that's not even taking account of all the victims who survived and, you know, saw their loved ones murdered.
You know, Timmy, I just did look this up real quickly. They did actually, because you remember Whitman had the brain tumor,
right?
And that caused that. They did actually examine his brain afterwards, mm-hmm. and could not find anything
abnormal.
Useful. They said that he was just a paranoid sociopath is what they decided.
Yeah, he's a piece of shit that killed a bunch of women and kids.
But some of these people do actually have, you know, we've seen so many of these serial killers that have these, you know,
organic.
They have the head injuries in their youth that changes them and changes the way they think. But they actually did examine it.
Not this guy.
He was just
a piece of shit.
Yeah.
But Charles Whitman, you mentioned Chuck. He had a brain tumor, I believe. He was the Texas shooter, right? The University of Texas.
He was a tower shooter. Yeah, Whitman. Which is, you know, to get a little bit off subject, but was interesting to me because if you have a guy like Whitman where you can directly tie the brain tumor to what he did,
mm-hmm.
how guilty is he of that crime?
Right.
You know, if he wouldn't have been killed and you could have taken him out and removed the brain tumor and you say he's no longer a threat to society, does he still need to spend 70 years in jail or get the death penalty? You know,
right. Whitman
kind of
knew something.
Thing.
Whitman knew
he absolutely
something.
Did. He tried to get help for it.
And
it drove him
up
to that tower.
I think even when his last note before he went up in the tower was that he asked them to do an autopsy on his brain because he felt that there was something wrong with him.
Yeah.
Okay.
But this guy, they did study his brain. And the headaches were just, they could find no organic reason for them.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm always, I kind of always hesitant to do these stories because you never know. As soon as we release this podcast, and it, you know, how they happen about once a week now, it's hard to.
Yeah, and this one was a big one because you got to remember that CNN, Timmy, was founded in 1980.
Yeah, yeah.
And this shooting was in 1984. So, there were mass shootings, not at the rate we have them now. But this was the first one.
They didn't get the 24-hour coverage.
This was the first one that they could cover 24/7, so everybody remembers it. You know, Luby's came after this in Texas.
Right.
Which was another one. It was not as bad as this one, I don't believe.
Well, this happened around the same time as a lot of those postal office, you know, term people going poster. Postal office employees. Yeah. That happened. That was generally.
I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Okay. Well, then let's thank all of you who support us on Patreon. If you would like to support us on Patreon, go to patreon.com/historydweebs, where you can give a little, you can give a lot, or
just a wee little bit to me.
Okay. Hit me, Colonel.
Well, let's thank Adam McWaters and Elaine Baker, Alexandra, Ali, Alicia Mincy, lovely Nina at the Already Gone podcast. Happy birthday to you. She had a birthday this week, Timmy.
Yes, and she is going to be joining us. Well, I'm on vacation. She's going to make a special appearance on the podcast, and that will be awesome because she is awesome. Before you go any further with that, a couple of things. Condolences to Jeff and Don Chestnut.
Yes.
Don lost her father. So we would want you to know our thoughts are with
very
you.
Sorry.
And to Tani from the Dirty Bits podcast. She lost her husband.
Yeah,
really
that was
sad.
That's tragic. And we actually lost a dweeb this week too, Timmy. I posted that today. He was a guy, Nelson Mock, who found us through, the other podcast Context that I do with Shelley.
Mm-hmm.
And he found out that I did another one and start. And this guy was like just this brilliant mathematician. He had a lot of political views. And he was not a type that you would think would go for history dweebs, Timmy. And and he didn't post much in there. But he occasionally would send me messages. But he found our show to be very, very funny. He thought it was very, very funny, and he enjoyed it. And he was a very, very sweet man. He was 66. His wife died 5 years ago on his birthday.
Wow.
And he passed away in his sleep last week. And he was a sweet, sweet man, and he'll be missed too. So,
absolutely.
But it just shows you that people. We don't really hear from them on the page. We don't always know that they're there, but they consider themselves dweebs, and he was a dweeb, and so we'll miss him.
And condolences to his family.
Let's see. Amanda Absolutely. Christine, Amber Anderson, Amber Scoville, Anna Gerlion, the girl lion, Andrea Odell, Andrew Frazier, Angela Santos, Angelo Villafante, Villafane, I'm sorry. Anna Garrett, Annette Petre, Anon, of course, Becky Traynor, Ben Dobrovich, Brandy McBride, Bridget Bernhardt, Brittany Martin, Callie Jones, me and Callie, Callie Jones. She likes when I sing that to me. Christy Lee at the Canadian True Crime Podcast. We recommend that one. There's no foul language in that one either, Timmy. Carl Asplin, Carol Elise, and of course we got one of our all-time favorites, Charlie from Crime Lines, Timmy. Cheryl LeBlanc, Chris Lane, Christine Howell, Cindy Clark, and Diane Trowbridge, Timmy. The Comeback Podcast, our good friends.
The
axe throwers. Yes. yeah, Clark, he's going to be a good axe thrower. Daniel Bassett, Diane Student, Erica Kinney, Aaron Turner, Fiona Crisp, Gina Green, and of course, one of my favorite people, Jay Cleveland Payne. Jairo Lopes, I'm sorry. Jamie Dent, Hyro, Jason Dykes, Jeff and Don, as we said, condolences to Don, and I suppose to Jeff, because they've been married a long time, and I'm sure Jeff was very close to the man, and they're a great couple. We got to meet them in person, and they're just a lovely couple.
Jennifer, I like Orca, Brandy, they're a delight.
They are a delight, and you know, even being a doctor and a professor, Timmy, Jeff Chestnut is aware that he married out of his league, Timmy.
He did.
Jennifer, but he's a fine man too. Jennifer Svoboda, Jess Watford, Jessica Greeno, Julia Rodriguez, Karen Barnes, Kelly Charette, Kim Stroop, Kimberly Smith. Let's see who we got here. Christine Malachinsky, Laura O'Reilly, Lydia Wassum Fisher, Maja, Marsha Boris, Marie, Markia Smith, Mary Courtney Sheldon, Melissa Montoya, Michelle Johns, the next Mrs. Colonel, Paula Kimes. We got a couple, the Pleasing Terrors podcast and Context and Clarity podcast, which we will be reviving in about two weeks with the lovely Karen Michelle. Although, you know what, Timmy? She continues to mock my dog, Timmy. Did you see the sweaters I made for my dogs, Timmy?
I did. He looked very dapper in his sweater.
We need to
talk about that, Martha Stewart.
Rudy did not look pleased with his sweater, but Bo was pretty pleased with his. Ruth Keith Whitfield, Sarah Bloom, Charlene, Shannon Arnold, Shirley Strapp, Stacey Alsop, and from Down Under, Stephen Potts, Terry Stratford, The Vanish Podcast, The They Walk Among Us, the lovely Ben and Roseanne Fenton.
I'm going to be seeing them soon when I'm in London.
Well, give them my regards, Timmy.
I will definitely
think very highly of them.
Yes.
Todd Long, Tommy Lane, and as much as I hate to say, the lovely Leanne Flanagan, Leanne Flanagan.
I'm going to see her as well.
I know, Timmy, and it's she. You know, she's my nemesis, Timmy.
I know. I'm sorry.
Don't let. If you learn of any plots she has against me, you need to turn over the plans.
She certainly will.
She's like a character in a Bond movie, Timmy. I don't know that I trust her. Viv, Whitney James, we've got, of course, Rudy the Wonder Dog, and Lady Beverly.
Lady Beverly. I'm hoping to get to see her. If not, I'm hoping to see her my next trip to London. Bo has not donated any money.
Bo went to the bank the other day, Timmy, to get his check card. And I had to sign for him because, you know, he's not quite 18 yet. And he said as soon as he gets his card, he will be a Patreon sponsor himself.
I look forward to that.
And, of course, the lady we do the show for week after week after week, the lovely Dottie Scott. How's Dottie doing, Timmy?
She is doing well.
She is doing well. Good. It's good to hear.
Yes. Rebecca. Did we get Rebecca? I don't know if I've updated that. I was supposed to update it last week.
Rebecca Lachulay.
Yeah. Don't want to forget
Rebecca
her.
Rebecca Lachulay. Okay. We don't want to
thank
forget her. No.
All of you who support us on Patreon. And like I said, if you would like to support us on Patreon, just go to patreon.com/historydweebs and you'll be able to make your contribution.
If you don't support us, thank you for listening to the show.
Yes. Leave us a review. We love reviews. We love positive reviews. If you got bad things to say about Brandy, that's okay. We understand. You can
give us the 5 stars. Give us the 5 stars and just unload on Brandy. Tell us what you think about Brandy, because we keep trying to show her these reviews and say, look here, Devil.
You know, we got a review last time that said that Colonel. I think it was Brandy who actually did this, because she said. How much they hated when we interrupt Brandy. Now, have you ever, can you think of one instance where we've interrupted Brandy?
Not while she was saying anything of substance that was going to add to the conversation, no.
And, Colonel, get this. They said they didn't like your singing.
What?
So, yeah. So, obviously, that was Brandy leaving a review. Well, we're on to you.
You know, the only thing I could say to this woman, or you know what comes to mind when a woman says that is, maybe she crazy. I think she crazy.
Makes me think that maybe her and I need to be best friends.
Thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you next time on History Dweebs. Bye, everyone.
Good day.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.